You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Loud and Lifted. I'm your host, Betsy Hamm, and today's guest is someone I've known for nearly 2 decades, and I knew back then she was going places. Gwynne Wiskount is a powerhouse who's built a career across sales, strategy, and leadership in some of the most male-dominated industries out there. In this episode, Gwynne shares what it means to build a strong foundation early in your career, how to turn your life's transitions into launch pads, and why asking for what you want is a non-negotiable skill. She shares the Hinge philosophy, those small moments and choices that swing big doors. It's something everybody needs in their playbook. Whether you're just getting started, pivoting, or pushing for your next level, this episode will fire you up to bet on yourself with confidence. Welcome, Gwynne, to Loud and Lifted. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so good to see you.
Yes, you too. I feel like I'm going to feel really old doing this episode because we have to go back to the beginning of our relationship was 17 years ago, and you were the intern on my team, and I was also on maternity leave, we were just talking about. So that feels like a lifetime ago, and here we are with this amazing career that you've had over the last 17 years, but it feels like yesterday, right?
It does. And it's so funny because while I was only the promotions intern for a summer, so roughly 4 months, I was obviously part of the H&R brand, the Hershey Entertainment Resorts brand, for a little bit longer than that. True. Prior to that internship. But it's so funny now that my current role in what we're building is in person, I tend to always go back to a lot of those experiences that I learned 17 years ago in those early days of being in the seat of a, you know, small intern in this massive company and learning from all these incredible people around me.
That's amazing. I love that you're still going back to things from that long ago. Well, and I go back to that long ago. I mean, through my career, I've had so many different interns on our teams. And, you know, there's the great, amazing, there's the maybe not so great. But you stood out even 17 years ago when you started. And I remember trying to keep you on my team. Like, just stay here. We'll find a job for you. Because you were this amazing rock star. Even when you were 21, 22, looking at you, it's kind of like, all right, this girl's going to be going places. Aww. So when you go back to that time, like, you know, what were you thinking as you had a great internship, you did another internship, like going back to that time in your 20s, were you like, I'm going to go set the world on fire? Like, what was your thought process even back then?
Yeah, I think looking back, I just got into, I actually switched my major in college to marketing at that point in time, and I applied for that role. And I remember I was selected out of, I think, like 120 applications, I was told by HR. And it was almost like I've been given this incredible opportunity. And I felt like honored to have the opportunity, but then I also felt this, not pressure, but excitement to take it and make it what I wanted it to be by all of these opportunities and these people around me. So when I took the role, and I think just like the day-to-day of the role, I was this sponge of, you know, on day two, JB was like, hey, we're not going to do a tour of the park. You're going to learn about radio promotions and you're going to be like running that for us now. I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing, right? No one actually does. But it was a nice, you know, opportunity to be given a lot of responsibility at such a young age, then that trust and confidence that I was capable for taking on this big responsibility on behalf of this massive brand. But I also think as part of that, I was able to have that confidence, yes, from experiences before, from I was an athlete growing up, so I was always around coaches that believed in me, pushed me, allowed me to continue to exercise who I naturally was. But with that in mind, I think that the one thing that I always kind of mentally go back to at my time at Hershey is that was the, again, I've been now working as far as post-grad or post-degree, Hershey was the only time they actually had female executives around me.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that's crazy.
That's
right?
Crazy.
So you were the director of promotions. And then of course the infamous, your episode
number
one, Kim Schaller, you know, the sales and marketing rock star that she is, this powerhouse, she was at the helm of this, you know, massive ship that we were running. And I think just walking in every day, the excitement of what was there, but also the excitement that everyone had around us and like building this brand and not just building the brand, but almost like this, this like gravitational pull that Kim has about her. I think almost like emulated down to everyone else in the department to almost then like rise to the occasion, right? Like, I wanted to do good work to make you look good in your role as director of promotions. You, and I'm not going to speak for you, but likely sure. went to do good work to uplift Kim and right. carry out her vision for what she wanted this to be. And I really felt that while I was there. And I think that was kind of one of the things that I really latched on to and kind of became passionate about of, again, like doing quality work, doing good work, but also at the end of the day, your product is a definition and kind of representation of yourself,
sure.
which I wanted to kind of, exactly. I wanted to kind of leave there and be like, I did this. People can speak highly of me and, you know, I'm proud of what I've done.
And that's amazing that you realize that at 21 or 22, because there's women a lot older with a lot more experience who still don't realize like it's about making, you know, your team look good, whether they're reporting to you or the person you report to, like it's making people look good around you. It also makes you look good too, but it's just, it's a team effort almost all the time.
Absolutely. It's that leveling up or rather managing up that I think a lot of, you know, it's like, you don't know what that word is at the time. Right. But it's, you know, they always say like in mentorship, like bring people along with you, but it's also like who's ahead of you that you can keep like propping up in a way too.
Sure. No, it's so important. So when you left Hershey, it's interesting. You said that you've been in, I mean, you've pretty much been in male dominated industries the rest of your career. So how's that been with you, with your fire and your energy and your excitement going into industries where you're surrounded by men?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. Right after Hershey, I then took a sales role in a very unsexy industry. I was selling containers for regulated material. So of course, you know, industrial, chemical, manufacturing, crazy. Predominantly male. And then after that, I built a company with some colleagues and I was the only female partner. And also our clients were founders and C-level, which predominantly are men. So I quickly in my 20s, majority of my career has been either selling to men, working for men, or consulting men. And it's almost like one of those things when people would ask me, who are your mentors? I actually didn't know what to say because I feel like the right answer would have been Betsy. And it's you, I think of you more of a role model versus a mentor because you weren't really part of my day to day, but you were this vision as well as Kim of like what a female executive looks like. Right. Oh. But when I think back to kind of those my 20s, and obviously now I'm in a different position, not really male dominated, which is great. But during that time, I think the thing that I got really excited about was I didn't really look at it as male or female. I just looked at it as what can I do to continue to show up and keep putting myself in the room at the table? I have a voice. I have a point of view and making sure that was always part of the conversation. So I think it was a lot of like confidence building, like out of the gate, very much like fake it till you make it in a way.
So,
and if I think back to when we started my first company, Full Funnel, I was 26 walking into these clients who were typically men and typically had, you know, very prominent degrees of MIT, Harvard, and they were the founder of these companies. And I, this sales and marketing girl, was there to tell them how to take their company to market and run it. Like, who the heck was I?
Oh my gosh.
But it was one of those things where it's like you had to just keep like doing the thing, right? And I was not an expert in their field, or I was not an expert in their company, but I was an expert at sales and marketing, right? And continuing to kind of double down in like what I knew and being confident in my competence. And it's almost like the areas that I wasn't as confident in, the repetition of doing and the repetition of like asking questions, you know, being a self-starter and a reader and finding out the answers that kind of allowed me to eventually have both like the confidence and competence to do my job very well. Then I would also say that a lot of my experiences in those roles that I had, it also came from a very like growth mindset, right? I always, you know, I say like knowledge is power, and I always made sure to, you know, take every opportunity and like identify it as how can this lead to experience? And then like, how does that experience like shape me? I always look back to even today, I can tell you every single hinge moment that led me to what I'm doing exactly right now. Ooh, and it was typically because, so there was actually a really cool book. It's called Hinge, and it's all about how it's kind of the same premise of The Alchemist, right? So The Alchemist, the thought and theory is essentially there are omens. And if you're aware of the omens, you can take advantage of those omens. Whereas with the hinge moments, it's almost like you're given an opportunity for like to open the door. It's a hinge moment to start something new.
Okay.
So my first job, I had a mentor who was a male, and I looked to him a lot for kind of telling him exactly what I wanted to do. I'm like, I want to move to Boston. He's like, make a plan, go for it, do it. Hinge moment, I then did that. I then told him, I really want to go work for a startup. I know it sounds crazy, but like, I want to go work for a startup. 2 weeks later, hinge moment, he's like, hey, I'm starting this sales and marketing company. Do you want in? I was like, yep. 2 weeks later, we started the company. So it's almost like if I didn't take that job in Florida, my first right out of college, I wouldn't have met my mentor at the time, who's a client of mine. I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity at 26 to build a company, to get this insane amount of experience, right? 45 different companies, 26 different industries, taking companies to market, products to market, sales, services, products, SaaS, B2B. That was kind of my main game, but you can't get that amount of experience.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Most times in a career, let alone 6 years, right? So I think of, you know, that opportunity led me then to my next one. So it's almost like these hinge moments of being able to kind of in reverse, go back and kind of map out, I made this decision or I made this choice and that led to X, and that it led to Y, and that it led to Z, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of my 20s was kind of those hinge moments and kind of launching me in now truly this kind of career I'm in now.
And which is crazy because, you know, people get, I think, hung up, especially when they're young in their 20s, like, oh, I want to be a director. I want to be whatever. I want to be a VP. They get very focused on the title versus the actual experience or like the industry. So it seems like your hinge moments were like, you just wanted to do something different. You wanted a different experience. You were involved in a different industry. You were just trying to build that foundation of what could potentially happen in the future.
I always think back to my 22-year-old self when I met with you at, is it called the Hershey Pantry? No, not Hershey Pantry. I forget what it was called, but we got coffee. And that on that day, I was given two job opportunities, my dream job at Hershey, which they basically created for me, and the opportunity to go work for a company in Florida. And I have never been to Tampa. That's where it was located. And I was so stressed out, 22. I'm like, this is going to be like monumental. I have to make this big choice. And I remember you, so matter of fact, I think Kennedy was probably
was
like,
with us.
Kenley was probably like in the carrier.
In a stroller.
Oh, completely, completely. And yeah, and I just remember you saying, well, nothing's permanent. And it kind of just like rolled off your tongue. So like naturally, you're like, nothing's permanent. Just go. If you don't like it, you can always come back. Right. And that was kind of the same advice that my mom had given me. And I think that like, because that was my foundation, like in the early stages of my career, that like, you can take risks, just try something on, make a choice, see what it looks like. If you don't like it, you can always change it. Right. And I think just like having the ability to almost have that almost like exhale.
Sure.
Right. Like this, the job that you get at 22 is not the job you're going to have probably 2 years from there. Rather 5 years from now, right?
Right.
And in my case, 17 years, right? That's not how it works, right? But so often we think that it's this big decision we have to make and it's life or death. And it's, well, no, it's what do you want the next 2 years to look like? Or even maybe 5 years. Don't think about, I hate 5-year plans. I can't even tell you what I'm going to do in five years from now. Like, what are we going to just do next 2 years, right?
Yep.
That's so a I think, great plan. Yeah.
People feel stuck. And I get that. Sometimes you are stuck, but you know, it's not permanent from a job perspective. And I think nowadays, I feel like maybe early in my career, employees were more loyal to companies. Like once you got to a certain company, you weren't going to leave. You're going to retire from there and be there 25, 30 years. And I remember even being 21, 22 and be like, I cannot stay at the same place for 25, 30 years. Some people can, and that's great. But I think especially these younger generations, it's the diversity and mixing it up and not feeling stuck. And it's a lot easier now to work for companies that maybe you can do remote or hybrid or whatnot. But yeah, it's not permanent from a job perspective. So if you're somewhere you don't like it, then look for something else. Like, I mean, you have to be doing what's right for you for sure. Absolutely. So kind of tying into your 20s, you actually had a post on LinkedIn, I think it was just last week or so, and I loved it. And you talked about a book that's called The Defining Decade and how it struck a chord with you now that you're in your late 30s? But
38, late 30s.
Oh my gosh. See, again, oh, that makes me old because whatever. But anyway, but that was something that impacted you 15 years ago. So talk to us about that book and how that thought process and how you give that book to people graduating still to this day.
Yeah. I will give it to everyone who's graduating. I will also talk about it quite regularly because I think that it's an important message that we can just plant into the minds of those early grads or just, again, like people starting out in their 20s. The book, The Defining Decade, is all about how essentially your 20s is the foundation of your career and kind of what you think of as the definition of success. And the reality is that that's different for everyone, right? Sure. At that time in my life, it was having a good job. That was defined by title autonomy. So I actually left corporate. I did a lot of internships in corporate, but I was like, I want more control. I want more autonomy. I want to be able to move the ball on my own without all this red tape. And I actually have been mainly in startups since then because of that. But when I think about my 20s, it really is that foundation of how can you set yourself up in your 20s to, again, be a sponge, get as much experience as possible, to almost like set yourself up for your 30s, 40s, and beyond. And it was all about there's no right or wrong way, right? It's not like, oh, you messed up your 20s, you're behind. But the book is all about if you do the due diligence and put your time and effort into, again, just being more intentional. That's like really what it is. It's being more intentional with your career and the opportunities that you're taking or looking for. And again, that continued forward momentum, right? I think that is really what, if I go back, it's always that forward momentum, saying yes to opportunities, communicating. I always say, you don't get what you don't ask for. Like, if you want something, tell someone so that more people know and they can help you. And again, every single job I've had, it's because I told someone what I wanted. And then it was, oh, you should talk to so-and-so. Or, hey, do you want to start this company? Or, I'm actually starting a company. Do you want to come with me? And really, that's what it is. It's being intentional in those years to gain experience that you believe will help you one day.
Mm, I love that. That's such a good point. And part of that, too, I think that you've always been good at is that connection and the relationship. So you were telling somebody that you want to do this, but it wasn't somebody who didn't have the ability to help you or connect the dots for you. So, you know, I think building those relationships at any point in your career is really important because then you can say, hey, I need help with this. Or do you know how I can get a job here or do this? So it's making those connections to help you connect the dots to that next adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always, and that goes back to, again, like that experience at Hershey, which is doing good work and having people, what's it called? Not mentorship, but sponsorship, where how are people talking about you when you're not in the room?
Right.
Right. So by doing that good work, by being top of mind, are they making the recommendations to others about you, whether or not they have the opportunity or not, but someone else might. I have people all the time reaching out to me, past employees, past clients. Hey, Gwen, I'm applying for this job. You're connected to so-and-so. Can you make an in? And that's fun fact. That's life. That is career. If you want a job, sure. Yep. Find out, yep. You know,
Well, and that goes back to the exposure piece. And at some point, we're going to have someone to talk on about PI. But I don't know if you were ever part of the PI conversations. That might have been after you left. But it's performance, image, and exposure. And that's your PI. And crazy from a research perspective, performance is the smallest piece of the PI. It's your image and your exposure. And that's to your point. I mean, you could be doing an amazing job. But if nobody knows you're doing it, then it doesn't matter. And you can probably think of people who tend to be women throughout your career who were rocking it, head down, getting stuff done, but like nobody knew what they did because they just were behind the scenes. So it's making sure you can tell people what you're doing in a like calm and confident way. You don't have to be cocky about it, but you got to have that exposure or it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, if you don't get something because someone doesn't know that you've done the work or have the experience, you can't fault them for it, right? If anything, like, well, how did you not communicate your value or your experience to almost put your hat in the ring, right? It goes back to you don't get what you don't ask for. So if you just think that someone's going to find you because you're doing great work, the reality is that's likely not going to happen. It may, but not for quite some time, right? Yep. So kind of, again, like owning your destiny, right? It sounds so like woo-woo, but like if you want something, go get it. If you want a job, if you want a certain thing, you have to be able to confidently say, this is why, this is how. And I always say, women hate talking about themselves, but you know what? Everyone else does it.
Yep.
Men love doing it. Why don't we do it?
Right.
Back to the Lean In book that was, you know, for gosh, 20 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Most women do not apply for jobs if they do not meet at least 4 of the criteria. Hmm. Whereas men, as long as they align with 2, they'll apply.
Interesting. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We think we have to hit all criteria and be perfect. And that's definitely not the case.
No, no.
Just going in there and being confident.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people also, I would say even I've hired many people in my day. If you can do the job from front to back and you've done this a million times in so many other roles, that's fantastic, right? You can add value on day one. But I kind of like when they come in a little bit greener so that there's opportunity to coach. And again, because I get a lot of fulfillment out of that, but again, be able to form what that would look like together versus them coming in with their experience and kind of a, well, this is how it should be done versus, well, this is how we want it to be done together, right? It's a place of growth and collaboration versus kind of more kind of rigid, if you will.
Right. No, that makes sense. So let's talk about what you're doing now. So now you're in your late 30s. You built your foundation. You're out there. And now you're doing something totally different, essentially, than what you've done before.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2023, I left my last company. I was the chief revenue officer of an ad tech company. And I kind of got the point in my life and I was like, what am I doing? Right. I've built this career that a lot of people look at me of adding value. They want me on their team. They want me to be part of building their companies. And while I can do a lot of things, it doesn't mean I want to do that, right? So I feel like I got to the point in my career of just because I can do certain things that people look as valuable, it doesn't mean I want to do that. And took a hard look of, okay, I've been doing this now for 15 years. What do I want this next chapter to look like? And I always said, I'm like, I just want to like burn it all down. I just want to burn it all down. And the reality is you don't have to burn it all down. You can just pivot, right?
Sure. And hinge. Is it a hinge?
Exactly. It's a hinge moment. And I said, you know, what I really want to do is I want to have impact, right? I made a lot of people, a lot of money. That's fantastic. But I can't, that can't be my thing. I cannot have these skills and just keep using it to pump money into this economy, if you will. So I really kind of shifted to, I want to create something that's impact for good. I want to be a force for good is kind of what I kept telling myself. So long story short, met up with a friend of mine and we've been building companies in parallel with each other. And I told her exactly what I was looking to do. And she said, that's so funny. I'm starting this thing and I think you might actually be a good fit for this because we have very different skill sets. So fast forward, we started a company called Fabric. We are a network of social spaces where people come together to reconnect in real life. We're on a large mission to end the epidemic of loneliness that we are currently in right now. It is the largest health crisis facing our world today. If you go back to, I think it was like the 70s or 80s when like the smoking was the crisis. That's how big this loneliness epidemic is of our generation and of our time. So what we're doing is we're creating social spaces for people to come together to find connection, find social connection, find a sense of community, build community. We have over 165 communities who call Fabric home. So that can range anything from knitting clubs to book clubs to women in AI to financial literacy. And what happens is they host gatherings and bring people together around these shared interests or topics. So when you walk into Fabric, people actually want to know, what's your name? What are you working on? You essentially are making friends like instantly. So it's a really, it's absolutely incredible what we're building. And if you think about from an employer perspective, you know, you have your three pillars of health. You have your physical, your mental, and your social. And if you think about physical, we all go to the gym or we do workout or we go for a walk, right? The physical health, that box is checked.
Sure.
If you look at mental health, exactly. If you look at mental health, there's already solves for that. Companies are now covering therapy. They're suggesting solutions and partnering with apps like Headspace for meditation or the Calm app. But if you look at that last pillar, which is social health or social connection, which is the contributor of the $460 billion impact of loneliness. And again, social health ripple effects onto your physical and your mental health. No one's solving for that. And that's really where we believe we are the industry creator of solving for. So we, perfect world, what this would look like is you look at your week, you have scheduled out what days you're going to be doing your workouts, what days you're going to be maybe checking in with yourself, daily meditation or a therapy session. I have mine today at 1. But then it's, are you scheduling that social connection, right?
And how is that clarify, part of our routine? In person. That's not on your phone.
Yeah,
that's not on Instagram. This is like, put your phone down and actually have a conversation in person.
Yes, it is. And that's the thing. It's people think that the pandemic is what led to this loneliness epidemic. And the reality is it's not. It was happening prior to that. And if you look at since the 70s, there has been a decline of clubs and communities in our neighborhoods and in our world today. That's obviously continued to go down. I remember going to dinner parties with my parents' friends. I think I've maybe hosted one dinner party in my entire adult life. Like, why?
Right.
So it just goes back to being intentional. Again, being intentional in your 20s, but being intentional around finding community, building social connections, and again, having that muscle worked, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, oh yeah, I'm with my family all the time. You can be in a family and be lonely, right?
Sure.
It goes back to like, are your own social needs being met? And actually, I'm really excited. We're doing it's a social connection summit. It was kind of like my little brainchild I kind of thought of earlier this year. And we're finally, it's coming to life 2 weeks from now at Fabric in New York. We have a location in Tribeca, a location in Dembo. We're going to be hosting it in Dembo. And the whole goal is to bring together a lot of other folks, both researchers, as well as we have a fantastic author who wrote a book called The Connection Cure, also participating. And it's all around social prescribing and kind of putting more of a light on that social connection element and being more intentional around like, what is your own social prescription, right? On a weekly basis, like what should that look like? So yeah, very, very different
from
what I've done before. But it's again, it goes back to like, this is meaningful work. I always joke around. I get to wake up every day and solve loneliness.
It's a little bit different than selling containers or whatever.
So different.
I was like, you're doing
so
what?
Different.
Over coming to work with me?
So different. You're right.
But you know, the other piece that too, I think of with teenagers, like maybe that can be phase two of this is because having teenagers, like, yes, they go to school, they're involved in sports, they do stuff, you know, randomly with friends, but they're so content coming home and laying on their bed and scrolling on TikTok for hours, days.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just, and sometimes then when you throw them in a social situation with people they don't know, they're like awkward. I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, they need to be more socialized. Like,
yeah.
You know, we're pretty social family. We have a lot of stuff going on and friends and family. But yeah, the other week I was kind of like, what the heck? Like, this is, I need to put you in more situations where you don't know people, where you have to ask questions and I don't know, learn about people. So I'd like
100%.
To request a teen.
In
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, please.
Yes. Fabric teen, Fabric silver for the later generations. This is all part of our big plan.
Silver, yes. That's interesting.
Because again, like loneliness is not, it's not one generation, right?
Sure.
Fabric members, our members range from mid-20s to mid-60s, right?
Makes sense.
And the reality is that, yes, that is the category or the generations that we're attracting, but there is absolutely an opportunity for
makes sense.
High school, if you will, and then obviously later stage. But yeah, no, but again, like think about that, right? They don't know how to socialize, right? Mm-hmm. Or just be, remember like when you were younger and you had like your parents like made you order your own food?
Oh yeah. Like, yeah, I always do that.
The waitress. Oh, it's like, they were little. Oh my God, it's so awkward. Like I have to talk to someone. It's like, yeah, that's called being a human, right?
Exactly.
And if you fast forward to again, like your 20s, like God, if you don't know how to like talk to someone verbally, IRL, like in person.
Yep.
And you're so used to just, again, a text or email or written.
Right.
That's only going to last so long.
No.
So yeah, there needs to be an opportunity. And I would say that even with the younger generations, it's kind of cool some of the things that they're gravitating to. Like that's their awesome. New interest in, you know, point and shoot cameras. Like
Well, everything comes back around, right?
Exactly.
Like we were talking about that earlier. It's everything, the pendulum swings, and now we're going to go back to hopefully a little bit more anti-technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, go back to the old school days. Maybe I should have kept some of those cameras and DVD players.
I know. A CD.
A CD. Yes. Those did suck. Hopefully they don't go back.
Yeah. But no, the goal is, again, like, let's start here, but then also know how can we even start sooner than that to create spaces for social connection. So that's, again, part of their habit, part of their routine, not this thing that they either A, don't know about, or B, they don't know how to solve it.
Sure.
Or where to go or what that even looks like. So yeah,
that's awesome. Excited. I can't wait to hear updates on that. That is such a cool thing that you're involved in and making an impact and solving the loneliness issue. Like who would have thought, right? That's just probably wasn't on your 2-year plan, but here you are. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I could talk to you all day, of course, but we're going to wrap here. So any parting advice or thoughts for our listeners that we haven't hit on yet?
I would say be intentional again around like who you surround yourself by. Like the fact that like you and I still have a relationship, I think I am so lucky to have. But again, that didn't happen by chance, right? That happened because I looked at you as someone who I wanted to become. Oh. And I knew that I had to continue to, again, put myself in front of you to gain that knowledge and get my mentorship, you know, while I was in different states, not in Pennsylvania, but like when I was in town, like checking in with you. That's literally how I got connected with my current co-founder, Jacqueline. Anytime I was in New York, her and I grabbed coffee.
Yep.
We didn't know that we were going to start a company one day.
Right.
But again, that intentionality of engaging. I'm like having this epiphany of like that social connection, right?
That social connection.
The social connection of it all. But no, I feel really lucky to know you and to have this continued mentorship and just connection with you. And it just keeps getting more fun as we continue to, again, have different chapters of our careers and the evolution of what we're all becoming.
Well, I'm so proud of you. You have done amazing things and I know you'll continue to do amazing things. And yeah, I knew you had that spark and that fire when you were 21 and you have proven that was true. So congrats to you. And we'll have to check in. I might have to talk more about the loneliness as you guys continue down this path.
Yeah. Creating community. I would love to, because if you think about it, if you go back to the caveman days, women were in community all the time because the men were going and hunting and gathering. So women, that's why I feel like if you ask a woman, like, how many friends do you have? Like, we have a ton, right? You ask a guy how many friends they have, it's usually like a few.
A few, that's true.
A few. But we're very good at creating community. Connection together. And that's, you know, that's not by chance. That's you know, where we essentially have come from.
That's very true. And that's part of the whole Loud and Lifted initiative is creating community that's supportive of each other, because sometimes you might have that personally, but not professionally. So how do you continue to build around you people who are going to be your cheerleader and going to support you and help you with that exposure? So we're gonna dominate the world together.
Yay!
Gwen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this. Was a great start to the day. Thank you.
Thank you. Gwen's story is a reminder that your 20s don't have to be perfect. They just have to be intentional. From internships and cross-country moves to boardrooms and business pivots, she's proof that small decisions made with courage compound into major impact. So take the risk, ask the question, make the move, and do it with a little bit of fire and a lot of intention. Thanks for tuning in to Loud and Lifted. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend, leave a comment or review, and of course, continue to follow us on social media. Until next time, stay loud and stay lifted.